We all got that message. This is all, as I'll talk about a little later, this is like the first major teaching that I got from Thay. That was my first of many, many wake-up calls. How essential and crucial knowing how to nourish our happiness is. So we'll spend that, our time this morning, very well spent in doing this practice in a variety of different ways. So the first hour we'll spend in meditation. We'll start with a silent meditation for maybe 20 minutes or so, or 25 minutes maybe, and then we'll go into a guided meditation. It'll be kind of a long one because I'm going to read from our chant book, the liturgy called Nourishing Happiness, which is actually 11 verses. And so I'll read that, and then we'll have a couple of minutes in between each verse to let the Dharma rain fall into our bodies and hearts and minds. So that's how our meditation process will go this morning. And then we'll have a break, and then I'll offer a talk, and then we'll have another break, and then we'll come back and do some small group and larger group sharing. So that'll be the logistics of our morning. So take good care of yourselves, relax, and listen to your body. Find a place that's very suitable for your mind and body to be relaxed and alert. This is a precious moment. We don't want to waste it. The Dharma body is bringing morning light. In concentration, my heart is at peace. A half smile is born on my lips. This is a new day, and I vow to go through it in mindfulness. The sun of wisdom has risen, shining in every direction. Noble Sangha, diligently bring your mind into meditation. Namo Shakyamunaya Buddhaya. Namo Shakyamunaya Buddhaya. Namo Shakyamunaya Buddhaya. nourishing happiness. Sitting here in this moment, protected by the Sangha, my happiness is clear and alive. What a great fortune to have been born a human, to encounter the Dharma, to be in harmony with others, and to water the mind of love in this beautiful garden of practice. The energies of the Sangha and mindfulness trainings are protecting and helping me not make mistakes or be swept along in darkness by unwholesome seeds. With kind spiritual friends, I am on the path of goodness, illumined by the light of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Although seeds of suffering are still in me, in the form of afflictions and habit energies, Mindfulness is also there, helping me touch what is most wonderful within and around me. I can still enjoy mindfulness of the six senses. My eyes look peacefully upon the clear blue sky. My ears listen with wonder to the songs of birds. My nose smells the rich scent of sandalwood. My tongue tastes the nectar of the Dharma. My posture is upright, stable, and relaxed, and my mind is one with my body. If there were not a world-honored one, if there were not the wonderful Dharma, if there were not a harmonious Sangha, I would not be so fortunate to enjoy this Dharma happiness today. My resources for practice are my own peace and joy. I vow to cultivate and nourish them with daily mindfulness. For my ancestors, family, future generations, and the whole of humanity, I vow to practice well. In my society, I know that there are countless people suffering, drowned in sensual pleasure, jealousy, and hatred. I am determined to take care of my own mental formations, to learn the art of deep listening and using loving speech in order to encourage communication and understanding, and to be able to accept and love. Practicing the actions of a bodhisattva, I vow to look with eyes of love and a heart of understanding. I vow to listen with a clear mind and ears of compassion, bringing peace and joy into the lives of others, to lighten and alleviate the suffering of living beings. I am aware that ignorance and wrong perceptions can turn this world into a fiery hell. I vow to walk always upon the path of transformation, producing understanding and loving kindness. I will be able to cultivate a garden of awakening. Although there are birth, sickness, old age, and death, now that I have a path of practice, I have nothing more to fear. It is a great happiness to be alive in the Sangha, with the practice of mindfulness trainings and concentration, to live every moment in stability and freedom, to take part in the work of relieving others' suffering, the career of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. In each precious moment, I am filled with deep gratitude. I bow before the world-honored one. Please bear witness to my wholehearted gratitude, embracing all beings with arms of great compassion. So let's take a little time to take care of ourselves, nourish our bodies. So let's see, it's 9:49. Let's come back in 11 minutes and be ready to start again at 10 o'clock.
Barbara, you're not, you're still muted, darling.
Thank you, Dolores. Here in my room, it's 10 o'clock. So looks like we're all getting settled in here. So I wanted to talk this morning a bit about our theme of happiness. I think our liturgy, which was could have been written by a Thai, but certainly written by our ancestors, really said it all. Maybe we can go into a little bit in about in our daily lives how we can nourish and foster our experience of happiness. And you know, we probably all know about the story of the indigenous people who live in a land of snow and how they have 72 different words to describe snow, and we have one. And up here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of different terms for what you might just call cloudy, because we have a lot of variations, and we're very familiar with it. So what I'm pointing to, of course, is that we tend to describe more carefully and accurately what's most important to us, and what's most in our environment and inside us. And a nuance in language can connect us to an experience in a way that understanding, comfort, and connection are enhanced. So we want to expand and develop our language around this experience of happiness. The foundational Buddhist teachings tell us that everyone wants to be happy. We know that these teachings have been translated many times, and at times in our society, there can be some confusion around this word happiness. Some people think that it means we have to deny what's going on and just walk around with a smile slapped on our face. Others try to parse out the difference between happiness and joy, and some prefer the word contentment. I think for right now, if we can just kind of let go of all these differences and just tune into the actual feeling of being happy, our understanding will be more clear. So right now, just for a moment, I'd like to do a little practice. So you can just shut your eyes. And what does happiness feel like to you? What are the actual feelings of happiness? If you connect with your breath and then with the feeling of happiness, you can either bring something to mind that makes you happy, or just be present in this moment and enjoy the conditions of happiness that are here right now. Okay, so now come back and would a couple of you like to unmute yourselves and just offer a word or a phrase that describes that feeling that you had?
Yeah, expansion.
Expansion.
Expansion, warmth. Yeah.
Connection. Connection with loved ones.
Uh-huh. Connection with loved ones. Yeah.
And I would say release.
Peace.
And peace.
And peace. Yeah.
I'd add on to Fred's tingling.
Tingling. And I feel uplifted and light.
Good.
Choice.
Choice. Robert over here says choice. Okay, so if you can mute yourselves again, just so we don't have any distractions. So already, my experience of happiness just from your descriptions is expanded and gotten much more specific at the same time. So this is what we'll do this morning, and this is what we can do as a sangha, is share this with each other. So what we're doing now is one way to become happier is to look and listen carefully so we can identify it when it comes. So, and this develops into our bank account of happiness, our bank account of love. So when we turn our attention onto the nature and the experience of happiness, we can see that a few things are happening. So one, it is really pointing to a universal desire of all beings. And we can always use the word, if we're allergic to the word happiness, or if it's overused, we can always use the word well-being. I think everyone wants to exist in a state of well-being. And we also can see through our descriptions and our sharing that this feeling of happiness is not just one thing. It's not generated in only one way. And for the most part, it doesn't come from external conditions. So today we can explore this multifaceted gem called happiness and to practice inviting it in all its different forms. Because we know that we only have moments. We know that nothing's permanent. that we can have a very easy, happy life. And then on a dime, everything shifts and life can become very challenging. We also know that really human beings are quite proficient at adjusting to changes in external conditions. Studies have shown that cataclysmic events, real tragedies, like, for example, losing your ability to walk. For most folks, their happiness takes a deep dive immediately, but then eventually finds its way back up to where it was before that event happened. We are amazingly adaptive and resilient in most cases. And it seems to me that that's really a great news, because we're going to need to be more and more flexible to adjust to all these challenging external conditions that we face right now. With the climate crisis and the supply chain issues we've been having for the past couple years, it seems like every day there's surprises in the world that we used to take for granted. A couple of months ago, Robert and I were grocery shopping, and he told me that the crop of mustard seeds in Dijon, France had been decimated by drought, so not to expect to see my favorite mustard on the shelf in the future. Then he announced that problems in the Po Valley in Italy, where Parmesan cheese comes from, were also happening. Last spring, I went to order a birthday cake for a special birthday, and the baker told me they couldn't take any special orders because they couldn't find any cake decorators. So I take these little surprises as reminders not to take anything in the world for granted. In the past few months, a basic financial foundation of ours was suddenly not there. It's now in the process of being replaced, but there was a time when my access to finances suddenly ended and I couldn't write a check or pay a bill. When support that you've relied on for many years suddenly disappears, whether it's a small item like getting the cheese you want, or a big thing like taking care of your health or your finances, or like having your house burned down, we get to see where our strength resides and where our practice has taken us. So let's explore our deep aspiration for happiness, for well-being. Tai tells us, he told us over and over, there are always enough conditions for happiness. And he gives us daily practices to encourage our ability to see them. So I'd like to expand a little bit on these today and offer some methods to enhance our ability to generate happiness every day. We realize that this happiness that we experience is not a self-centered act. Our world needs the fuel of happiness to sustain itself. One of the first teachings, as I said, I remember from Tai, is that unless we know how to generate happiness in ourselves, we won't be useful to ourselves and to others in the world. We'll just become overwhelmed in the face of suffering, and we won't be any good to anyone. So if we want to be part of the well-being of our earth and our society, we need to know how to generate happiness every day. So the Buddha tells us in his sutra on the full awareness of breathing that we know how to make our minds happy. So how do we do this? Well, we know that, that all of our mindfulness practice helps us by teaching us to slow down, to pay attention, to accept and be open to what is. But how specifically can we train our minds towards happiness? So we work with both our internal and our external environments. Working with our internal environment, our minds and our feelings. How does this process work? Well, the Buddha instructs that concentration is a key to training our minds towards happiness. I'd like to read exercises 10, 11, and 12 from the Sutra on the Full Awareness of Breathing. Number 10. Breathing in, I make my mind happy. Breathing out, I make my mind happy. We practice like this. Number 11. Breathing in, I concentrate my mind. Breathing out, I concentrate my mind. We practice like this. Number 12. Breathing in, I liberate my mind. Breathing out, I liberate my mind. We practice like this. So the Buddha is telling us here that when we learn to make our minds happy, this leads to concentration, and concentration leads to freedom. So what is concentration? And where does this ability to concentrate come from? Does it come from our effort from frowning and digging down to aggressively eliminate all distracting factors in our environment? This is pretty much what I thought concentration was when I came to this practice. But in fact, the Buddha tells us that concentration comes from the opposite. It comes from just letting go of distractions. It's the ability to be fully, completely present with the world, inside and outside, as it is, right in this moment. And what a relief. We let go of all those worries and concerns, plans, endless self-reflective thoughts and cravings, and we settle ourselves in the simplicity of this moment. So one of the lines in the morning chant that was one of my favorite lines is, in concentration, our hearts are at peace. I've always loved that reminder of what concentration can do for me. It gives me the ability to eat my food instead of eating my worries and my fears and my plans. It gives me the ability to notice the miracles of life. The older I get, the more I value the practice of doing one thing at a time. As attempting to multitask can get me into more trouble than when I was younger. Recently, I was eating and talking and taking my supplements, and a pill got stuck in my throat. Fortunately, Robert saved me with the Heimlich maneuver, and I am here today because of it. So now taking my pills are a mindfulness practice. I no longer think of mindfulness practice as a good thing to do. It's now my survival strategy. In her book, A Heart as Wide as the World, Sharon Salzberg talks about this process of making our minds happy, which is also referred to as gladdening the mind, which is a really lovely phrase, and how this gladdening the mind leads to concentration, which then leads to freedom. I'd like to read an excerpt from her where she talks about this. It's a page long, but it's so good, and it explains so much that there is really nothing I could do to change it. So I'd like to read this. It's about six paragraphs. So this is from her book, A Heart as Wide as the World. Straining to keep the mind on an object does not create the condition for concentration to most readily arise. However, when the mind is at ease, serene, and happy, we can more easily and naturally concentrate. Happiness in this sense does not mean the fleeting experience of pleasure, which inherently contains a quiet anxiety based on knowing that the moment will pass. The kind of happiness that is the proximate cause of concentration is a state of tranquility in which our hearts are calm, open, and confident. This is the fertile ground for the growth of concentration. When we live in harmony with the innate truth of our interdependence, we want to refrain from doing harmful acts. This leads to the mental condition of restraint. Restraint is the foundation for the development of the absence of remorse. When we restrain a momentary impulse to do a harmful act, we are able to see the impermanence and transparency of the desire that initially arose. Having avoided harmful action, we also avoid the guilt, fear of discovery, and the confusion and regret that come when we forget that what we do has consequences. The positive condition that results from restraint is called gladdening. Absence of remorse is the foundation of the development of gladdening. Gladdening is the state of lightness and ease we find in our lives as we increasingly care for ourselves and other beings. Because we genuinely experience a connection to others, we let go of actions that are hurtful and do fewer things that keep us feeling separate from others. Thus, our common, dispiriting sense of loneliness and alienation is relieved. Gladdening is the foundation for the development of happiness. In this way, we arrive at happiness, the happiness of peace, composure, and strength. This is happiness that is not going to fracture as conditions change, as people behave in disappointing ways, as we do not get what we want. This is happiness based on knowing our interconnectedness, on the integrity of acting from our deeper values. It is based on a mind at ease. This is self-respect. Rather than the turbulence and agitation that we experience when the mind is full of worry, remorse, and guilt, the mind is quieter. Because there is not a great bundle of complexity that we need to disentangle and make amends for, we can become more peaceful in the moment. Tranquility arising from happiness is the foundation for the development of concentration. Concentration is steadiness of mind, the feeling we have when we are one-pointed and powerful in our attention. When we can concentrate, a door opens to insight and wisdom. Concentration is thus the foundation for the development of correct knowledge and vision. This means being able to see things as they actually are, without so quickly distorting the experience through the filter of our hopes and fears. It is the release from these filters that leads us personally, intimately, to trust in our own sense of truth. So we can see that this is our whole practice. Concentration, letting go, happiness, restraint, our ethical training. It all comes here in these three little exercises in the full awareness of breathing. And each one brings us to awakening. So those of you who know me know that I like to have some practical ways of leaving this with ways to tools and ways to practice that might not have occurred to you before or may have occurred to you, but are a reminder. So I'd like to offer just a few ways that I've been working with developing my ability to create happiness each day. The first one that most of us probably know about is flower watering. Flower watering is a practice of noticing and then expressing something beautiful about a person. It seems like such a simple thing to do, to offer a compliment or an appreciation. But this is a really deep practice. you know, we call that one of the kinds of love, of the four kinds of love, we call sympathetic joy, which is the happiness you feel when you see something good happening to somebody else, you know. And flower watering actually is the next step. When you witness something good happening to someone else, then you say something to them, and that creates a connection, and that spreads the joy. This is a great habit to develop, as it exponentially grows happiness, because it gives happiness to the person that you're blessing. It certainly brings happiness to you. And scientists have studied this and have shown that it brings happiness to everyone who witnesses this, all participants. So this is a way that we actually affect our whole environment just by offering a moment of joy, a moment of blessing and appreciation to one other person. So we can develop this as a tendency. Recently, I was with a woman who's a resident here, and she's a recent acquaintance, and I knew that she's dealing with some cognitive issues. And I know that she had been to the doctor that week and gotten some news, and I didn't know what it was, but we were together in an outing, a group picnic at the beach, and it was a beautiful day, and it was quite lovely and fun. But I noticed that she seemed very preoccupied and was really unable to enjoy herself. And I wanted to let her be however she needed to be, but I also wanted to encourage her somehow to enjoy the moment, because it was such a lovely moment. So I noticed that her hair looked nice. And when I got her attention, I mentioned that, and I asked her if she had gotten a haircut, and I complimented her on it. And this brought a little smile and a little connection between the two of us. And sometimes that's all we can do, and it was enough. So we call this practice flower watering. It's such a generous way to live. And it really offers endless feelings of goodness and connection to others. And it can also be a radical act. In the face of negativity, responding with flower watering can be very effective. I came across this little story by a woman named Lillian Moore. She says, this is a story about these people who moved. A few months after my husband and I moved to a small Massachusetts town, I grumbled to a resident about the poor service at the library, hoping she would repeat my complaints to the librarian. The next time I went to the librarian had set aside two new bestsellers for me and a new biography for my husband. What's more, she appeared to be genuinely glad to see me. Later, I reported the miraculous change to my friend. I suppose you told her how poor we thought the service was. No, she confessed. In fact, I hope you don't mind. I told her your husband was amazed at the way she had built up this small town library, and that you thought she showed unusually good taste in the books she ordered. So, what's really effective? And I just thought of something. It's so funny. We have this phrase, which is a social phrase to help us when we see harming, and when we say, when you see something, say something. But I also thought, well, that could apply to developing our flower watering. Because many times I'll see something. I'm in a group of people and I'll say, oh, I love that color on that person, but I don't say it. So I'm going to say, when I see something like that, say it to that person. So that's flower watering. So I have a few other techniques, and these are from my Hawaiian shaman teacher, which is a very practical teaching. And he talks about four different kinds of happiness, or four different aspects of happiness. So again, I'm just trying to expand our ideas of what happiness is in our daily lives. So I'll just name these four kinds, and then we can stop for a moment and just experience each one of them. So we know the first one very well from our Buddhist teachings. It's a happiness that just comes from pure sensory pleasure. The good feeling we experience when something we see, hear, taste, touch, or smell pleases us. So just close your eyes for a moment and bring to mind some external condition that makes you happy. Things like a blue sky, a tasty meal, the smile or touch of a friend. Notice how you feel in your mind and in your body. So the second kind of happiness that he talks about is the happiness that comes from resolution. I love this one. This is the pleasure of crossing something off your to-do list or of winning a game or solving a problem, finishing a project, having your curiosity satisfied, or understanding something for the first time. It could be something like cleaning the kitchen, getting all your supplements down, whatever it is. So close your eyes for a moment and bring to mind a recent memory of a small accomplishment. And notice how you feel in your mind and in your body. So the third kind of happiness comes, as Serge says, from the experience of harmony, when two or more things flow together peacefully or joyfully. It can be in the form of music, nature, human interaction, or beauty of any kind. So bring to mind something that you find beautiful and harmonious and flowing. Notice how you feel in your body and your mind. And the fourth kind of happiness he describes is what we would call the sympathetic joy, the happiness that comes from the happiness of others. So now bring to mind someone dear to you and something good that's happened for them. Some goodness that's come into the life of someone you care for. Notice how you feel in your mind and in your body. So we learn from all these exercises that happiness isn't just one thing. It's comprised of being present, of feeling useful and successful, of enjoying the wonders in our world, and of being generous and feeling connected. So there's one other practice that I'd like to introduce, and I just been doing this, so I came up with this one. Might be a surprise to think of it as a happiness generator, but each day, think of someone who has died. We certainly all know the grief of losing a loved one, but there's also happiness in the rich memories of having been blessed by knowing them. I recently read a really remarkable book called The Grieving Brain by a neuroscientist who studied what happens in the brain when we grieve. She points out that when we're in a loving relationship, that person is teaching us to love, and that the neurons and the neural pathways in our brain are formed and shaped by this loving relationship with this other person, and this other person teaching us how to love. Our physiology is changed by this person. So we have to carry this person with us always. There's no way we can be separated from this person, not only from our feelings and our memories, but really in our physiology. So that we all know people, beloveds who have died. There are two beloveds in our Sangha who we might take a moment to think of, Mary Jane Tong and Donna Kitchen. And we just take a moment to remember how they changed us with their love. And can you feel their precious presence still with us? So now I'd like to move into a little different way of building happiness. This is one of my particular ways of finding happiness, and that is to get a bigger view, to get some vision about the present and the future and the capacity, the human capacity evolving. So I'd like to share with you some teachings from a woman named Patricia Albert, who I came across not too long ago. She works with consciousness, and she has a structure which has the evolution of three thresholds of consciousness. Her teaching struck me in a way that profound ideas often do, where they seem absurdly obvious and yet profoundly change you. And then after I came across her teachings, I've heard these same ideas echoed many times. So I feel it's part of the zeitgeist that's happening right now, part of our collective understanding. So Patricia describes her structure through the lens of these three thresholds of the evolution of consciousness. And the first threshold comes through individual growth. So if you're like me, we're always working on ourselves. You know, my whole life, I can't count the number of self-help books and courses and other practices I've done in my whole life. I really have a sincere desire to be the best me that I can be. And this has been a major flow of energy through my life. And Patricia here suggests that all this is good, and we could endlessly work on ourselves, which is how I do feel. But there might be a time when we could release some of this personal work and begin to focus more on our collective evolution. So this is threshold two. The second threshold is a shift from the personal focus to the collective. So for me, it's an experience of being part of Indra's net. If you know the old story, the Hindu story, the ancient story of Indra's net, where there's a vast net, it's the energy of the universe, and at each cross point of the net is a jewel. And each jewel reflects every other jewel in the net. So the source of identity now doesn't come from any kind of separate self trying to connect to the net. Rather, it's characterized by the shared unity and creative union of already being part of this net, being a jewel in this net. So you're plugged into this network of love. You have an experience of being plugged into it. And your identity, or as Patricia calls it, your particularity, comes from the source. So the focus is no longer on your personal journey so much as on your on the collective journey. So we recognize here that the source of everything is love. We can see that each person's essential nature is love. And we can see the overall design with more clarity. When we view the world as individuals, we usually don't have the capacity to hold the pain of the whole world. And we can easily become overwhelmed. But when we experience life as being part of this vast network of love, the suffering is less personal and there's a larger circuitry to hold the pain. So this experience of love and oneness helps release our individual traumas and our personal issues. Mutual awakening bypasses the part of the brain that pays attention to itself, and the impulse of this second threshold is wanting to give yourself completely. And that the third threshold is called, she calls, the living body of unity. And this is, in the next wave of evolution, the collective body begins to function as one. Instead of co-creation with individuals working together, we become one body. This impulse of evolution is being animated by the future, by the sacredness and oneness of life. To me, this represents the human potential to let go, the seventh factor of awakening. Since every problem in the world is caused from operating in the illusion of our separateness, we can't function together. Patricia describes this stage using Thay's word, interbeing. When our awareness of living in this dynamic collective begins to operate in unity as a single organism. When I heard this, I realized in a new way what Thay had been trying to do when he created the monastic community. To shed thinking of ourselves as individuals, to learn to honor the collective as a precious living being. It gave me so much gratitude for the grand experiment of monastic life in our world. And in our own way, as lay practitioners, we also have this ability to live from the understanding that we are all one body, that we are this Sangha body that we're creating here right now. That whatever happens anywhere is happening to us. That blame and the illusion of separation keep us in darkness. But bringing our whole self to this moment with the peace of a concentrated mind and heart gives us the strength and determination and joy that will manifest the next great threshold of human evolution. Last April, on my 75th birthday, I was meditating and I decided to ask for some guidance for the coming year. I used to do this all the time, but haven't done it much recently. But I thought, well, this is a notable day, a landmark, and I'm going to ask for some guidance. So a few minutes later, a very clear voice in my head said, get out of the story of your life. I kind of like, huh? But now I'm beginning to understand how this directive speaks to the evolutionary force and also to what the Buddha taught 2600 years ago. We are more than our separate selves, and we have been given the skills, the insight, and the practices that are most needed in our world right now. At this critical time, we need to step up. Many of us have heard the story that Thay used to tell about the boat carrying refugees when a great storm would come up. Everyone would freak out, but if there was just one person in the boat who remained calm, it was much more likely that the boat would make it to shore. Right now, each of us has the assignment to be that calm person in the boat, and we have been given the path and the skills to do this. Not too long ago, I heard Jack Kornfield tell a story about our teacher. Many years ago, there was a gathering of a couple of thousand people outside at Spirit Rock for a day of practice with Ty. Apples had been passed out, and everyone sat in silence doing eating meditation. And then Ty suddenly began to walk from quite a distance towards the group. And Jack described it as just a complete stillness fell over everyone. And he described Ty walking toward them in this way. He carried the great medicine of a free heart. This is the freedom that comes from concentration of the heart on love, on the Sangha body. And then Jack told a story about sitting by Ty that day while Ty was giving a Dharma talk. And even though the theme of the Dharma talk was on happiness, Jack started feeling sadder and sadder. And he couldn't understand why this was happening or where the sadness was coming from. So later on, Jack was able to have lunch with Ty. And as they were sitting there, Jack explained this situation, that this thing that had happened to him, and asked Ty for an explanation. And Jack said that Ty was quiet for quite a while, and then he said, "I've experienced so much suffering in my life, I have to teach how to be happy." So we practice for our survival and for our freedom. So there's one last thing that I'd like to share with you. And that is what makes me happiest. So most of us are probably familiar with the concept of bodhicitta, the mind of love, the innate goodness that all beings share. The Buddha tells us that every being has the potential to grow into their basic goodness. So I've spent some time thinking about how I might experience bodhicitta. What are my best moments? Because this is the secret of my happiness, experiencing and expressing my innate goodness. So do you remember Mr. Rogers' advice to a child when the child was in trouble? He said, look for the helpers. So I've found that my greatest happiness comes when I'm able to be a helper. So here's one simple example. About a year ago, I was in the Costco parking lot putting some groceries into the back of my car. A man a few cars down from me was returning his empty cart over on the other side of me. And as he walked back and got in his car, I looked and noticed that a bag from the pharmacy was still in his empty cart. So I went over and picked it up and walked over to his car, knocked on the window, and when he looked, I showed him the bag. The look on his face when he saw it was priceless. And I could only imagine the difficulties he would have encountered had he lost the medication he or a loved one of his needed. I was so happy to be able to be his guardian angel in that moment. That memory still brings me joy, and it fuels my great aspiration to be a helper, which means to walk in this life in a way that I will notice what is needed and am able to respond. Let's continue to remind ourselves that bodhicitta is our essence. Bodhicitta is the strong, pure desire to be an artist of life, expressing what is most beautiful about being human. We need to develop our one-pointed focus on love, responding with our mind of love when meeting every obstacle that presents itself. So I'd like to finish with a quote from historian and author Howard Zinn on the importance of what you can choose to emphasize. This comes from, the source of this is something called You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places, and there are so many, where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act, and at least the possibility of sending this spinning top of a world in a different direction. And if we do act, in however small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory. I'll have a bell. So, dear friends, once again, it's 11 minutes before the hour. So let's take a break and return at 11 o'clock. How about we enjoy a couple of sounds of the bell as people come back? So, dear friends, I've done a lot of talking, and now it's your turn to be able to spend some time talking together. This is always, oftentimes for some people, the favorite time of these mornings together. So Dorothy will split us up into small groups. We'll have about 30 minutes to talk, and then you know, your own group, the flow of these groups, it's organic. There is always shifting and changing, and sometimes you're in a group of where you just feel like talking a lot. Sometimes you feel like being quiet. So whatever happens in your group, know that the practice is there with you. And there's a lot of material that we've talked about, so you can talk about your experience of happiness, your struggles of happiness, what's happened for you this morning. Share what we all know. We just share what's in our heart. And everything we share is confidential and simple and intimate and a gift for whoever we're sharing with as well as for ourselves. The gift we give to the sharer is our ability to really listen, to give our attention and listen. And when that happens, I find inevitably that something comes out of me that I had no idea was there. Some wisdom or insight or issue or something. So it's a process of discovering ourselves, most of all. So we'll give ourselves the 30 minutes and then a 10-minute break. And however your group flows, then you determine how long that is. And then we come back, and we'll come back as a group together to share as a group at 11:40. So it's over to you, Dorothy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Dorothy. Am I in your group?
Well, I just joined your group. I need to go back for a second and find out what happened to Sandy. So I'll be right back.
Oh, okay. Should I just stay here?
Yes.
Okay.
If I can do this. Okay. Oh, yeah. I need to.
There's Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. Good.
Oh, wow.
I was just going to go looking for you, Sandy. I think I better go back and.
Well, Dorothy, I'm not sure where everyone went off to. It's 11:40. I can't hear you.
I didn't close all the rooms. So now I'm closing all the rooms and they're coming back.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
And for those of you who know Fred, he had an appointment he had to leave for. Was that loud enough? He was very happy.
Good.
Not to leave.
Right.
Well, let's start this final part with a bell. And there's Karen. Well, dear friends, I hope we've done a good job nourishing our happiness this morning. This is our time for a little bit more sharing as the larger group. You might want to share something that happened in your small group, or you might want to just share what's in your heart right now, something you got from this morning or something that's in your life. I realized as I was sitting here waiting to come back that, you know, as we do, my mind was going a little bit to, okay, after this is over, then what's next? And I realized that nothing was really coming to mind. I had no plans or schemes. I mean, I'm sure I'll get something to eat and take a walk and start the laundry, but it was like nothing needed to be done. And for me, in my particular way of being, that's a very good indication of concentration and tranquility and happiness and letting go. And so I thank you all so much for being here, because that's a very precious event for me. So I open the circle to sharing. Just unmute yourself and share what you'd like to.
I'm Nancy, and I loved your referring back to the flower watering. I only came across in a book I picked up recently that there is such a thing as a flower watering ceremony, where people all get together and they present a flower to someone and tell them how much they appreciate them. But I love the idea that in the broader world, that we, if we see something positive, let's say it. What a difference it makes. And, you know, I've noticed that one group of people that you can do that to are people like work people at the grocery store, someone who bagged your things. And I often feel like that they're really trying to step up their customer service by saying, have a great day, and, you know, you can smile and look at the name tag and say, thank you, Marcus. And, you know, there's really a lot of really positive exchange in flower watering. So I thank you for that thought to mind today.
Carolyn, Nancy, that brings to mind of where, which I never forget, but where we live now in a senior community. And there's so many staff people here, servers in the dining room. Well, I can't name them all, but when we eat in the dining room, you know, I always make a point of thanking the server for helping us. And they're young, you know, teenagers or 20-year-olds, or some are 30. We don't have that many, but and I know it makes them feel good. And we try to get to know a few of them, and that makes them feel good, too. Someone came last night. We were at dinner, and someone, a server that used to be in the dining room, now is in assisted living helping that facility. And she came over to say hello, and I could not place her name, but I knew her face, and she knew us, and she wanted to say hello. So she sat down and visited with us, and it made us so happy that she made a point of coming over to say hi. And she mentioned her sister, who also worked there, and I remember her sister's face. So anyway, when I got home, I looked in our book, in our directory, and I had written down their names a while back, I think. So now I know this young lady's name, and I'm so remembered now, and I'm so grateful, though. It made us feel so good, and I think it made her feel good to make us feel good and remembered, you know. So that's part of our, really our everyday, the groundskeepers and all these people that make this place work. And so thank you for that reminder for me to voice this. And I think that's another thing for me is when I see something, when I see, recognize something, either, as Barbara said, harmful or for the good, to speak out and say something, you know, in a kind way, if it's harmful, if you can, and be safe. But I know often I've had the urge or the instinct to do it, and I haven't done it, and I've regretted that, you know, after that. And anyway, I'm so grateful for being part of this today. It's so rare for me, and a quiet morning here by myself at home, and being with you all, it's just, I just am full of gratitude and happiness. Thank you all so much.
My name is Miriam, and first I just want to appreciate being able to be here, because I don't know any of you except for Barbara. Oh, and then I met Fred. And this has been a delightful experience. Just a really, it actually has been like in a flower garden. And thinking of flower watering just after thinking of this metaphor. And one of the things that I'm really happy to have learned here is the naming of concentration in a way that wasn't hyper-focused. I'm very diligent about things I concentrate on. And so the word concentration has always been sort of edgy for me. And today I feel it as a permission to be able to have something fill the screen, fill my body, fill whatever. And to be able to do that with the feeling of happiness, to let it infuse me, let myself be infused, is a form of concentration. And it is so nourishing and is so perception changing, like what Barbara was talking about, what you were talking about, Barbara, about the senses shift, the perceptual experience of the senses shifts. And I feel like I got an extra extra big set of permission to live from well-being in a way that is organic to me, and rather than something I'm striving for. And that's just miracle. So thank you all for participating in my miracle, and you, Barbara, for helping shine the light, this beautiful lantern that just...
I would just like to speak briefly about being on the receiving end of one of those helpers. I had been on a long walk in Lithia Park one day, and I was trying to regain my equilibrium during the park, and you know, my brain and body were working furiously with each other. But I had a wonderful walk, and so I was deposited again down by my car, and I was getting ready to drive off, and this man walked up holding a card, and it turned out it was my debit card that had dropped out of my fanny pack when I got my car keys. So sort of like, what do you do without your debit card, right? Sort of like the linchpin of your finances. And I just rolled down the window, just so thankful for this. I called him an angel, and he said, oh, it's easy to get them replaced now. Like, no problem. Anyway, but when I rolled up my window, I just thought, oh, I'm part of this wonderful network. You know, I've got to take this as a sign from the universe. So it can be a very powerful experience to have someone watch you leave your bag of medications in the car at Costco. So. Thank you all. You're all angels to me today. And thank you, Barbara. This was very
I just wanted to say how very lovely it was for us to be able to talk again to Carolyn, who's in Idaho. I remember when she moved, and at first I didn't recognize her, and then of course I did. And remembering back to the days when she was in our Sangha, and it was just such a sweet memory to be able to do that. So I was immensely grateful to have the chance to rekindle something that I liked so much when we were at the Congregational Church and that whole period of time. So that by itself was a real joy and brought happiness. So. And Barbara, your words are very meaningful, and I look forward to hearing that recording again. They were so good. This time I'll take a few notes, because my memory, you know, like in a couple of days will fade. about all of these great things that you said. So I'll be happy to have access. And to me, the technology of this is just mind-boggling, actually, that we're able to do this, even though we're spread out. Bob and I right now are on the coast in Yahats. So that's where we're recording from, is that distance, not at our house, and yet it still works. So isn't that marvelous? Bowing out, Karen, I hear.
I don't know.
What are you trying to do?
Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to connect with the group and just...
Laura, we hear you. If you want to say something, we hear you.
You're doing fine, Laura. You unmuted. That's good.
No, I'm keeping these. I wanted to... We're talking about...
Now we can't hear you.
You're muted again, Laura. Can you unmute yourself again, Laura?
Okay,
talk.
Hi. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
No. Oh, really? Oh, it's been wonderful. Wonderful to talk to all of you today and to see Barbara again up close. And Dorothy, right?
Yes.
Nice to see you, Dorothy. Thank you for everything. I'll bow out.
Thank you for being here, Laura.
I was lucky enough to see Laura at Bi-Mart last weekend with a cart full of chrysanthemums.
So our time is coming to a close. Is there anybody else who would like to say anything?
Elizabeth here. I just want to say thank you. Thank you to Barbara for your preparation, and the way that you wove everything together was really marvelous. And I took notes, so I get to replay it later. And it's very rich. And thank you to all of you for holding the space for this kind of activity. I deeply appreciate it. Thank you.
So let's end our practice as we normally do. Just as a reminder, we are so fortunate to have had this time together to nourish our happiness, to build our resilience and strength and connection. And the best thing we can do is to offer that out to the world. So whatever benefit that we feel in our hearts from this morning, we can right away turn out to the world and offer it to everyone who is needing this, which is just about everybody. So that's the meaning of offering the merit of our practice. May the merits of this practice benefit all beings and bring peace. Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you so much, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Yummy.
Carolyn, it's great to see you. I didn't recognize you either.
Oh, me?
Yeah. It's so great to see you.
We changed in 6 years or so.
Greetings to Robert in the background there.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, Robert.
Oh, Robert.
Good to see you, Robert.
Good to see you.
Bye.
The other Bye. Robert. Yes, hi. Okay.